Hello, friend! Thanks for putting this podcast in your ears. It is, of course, Vanity Project. We are listening to a wonderful album today. We're going to go through it and decide if it... No, I've already said it's wonderful. Okay, I am starting again. Stop.
Nope.
No. Nope. We are. I'm starting again.
Nope.
James, we are. I already gave away that it's wonderful. I've ruined the whole thing. Hang on. Everybody, quiet on set. Quiet on set. Quiet, please. Don't keep this in, James.
I'm keeping it in.
Please don't. I literally just gave away the thing that it's wonderful. Okay, well, it's wonderful. That's it. Listen to the album, not this podcast episode. Goodbye. James, I'm begging you. This is not a bit. Can I please start again?
You should take another run at it, certainly.
James, I know already you're going to keep this in. Don't. Oh my God, I hate you so much. Let me just do it again. I already told them that it's wonderful. Okay. Hello, friend. Welcome to Vanity Project. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Today we're talking about an album. It's pretty interesting, and we will decide by the end if it was indeed a mistake or not. I'm joined, as always, by the beautiful, if not completely mean and bullying, James Colley.
Thank you for having me, Bridie. Now I have to keep the topic, because otherwise that introduction won't make sense.
Yes, it will. Everybody can completely tell the dynamic. You're mean to me every week on this podcast.
That's not true. Don't tell them that.
James, I'm begging you, please don't keep that topic.
I am hyped up because this is I Am the Greatest, Cassius Clay, so Muhammad Ali, but this is about 6 months before he changes his name to Muhammad Ali, but we will call him Muhammad Ali because that's what he would like to be called. I had no idea what to expect with this. Like, usually with these, I have a decent idea going in because I really love Vanity albums, as you might know. And I thought, like, okay, I get what's going to happen, or I've heard of the album, or it's infamous. I found this one when we were looking for a different one.
Mm-hmm.
I had really no idea going in what to expect from this.
It's pretty phenomenal, isn't it? I'm so excited to be looking at this album this week. But Muhammad Ali, obviously one of the most important sporting icons ever. I think he was... named like sports person of the century last century. Massive call, but completely deserved. He's had such an enormous impact on not just sport, but on politics. He was an activist. He was a big part of like the counterculture movement. There's all this stuff that I think of when I think of Muhammad Ali, but I did not know in amongst his completely wild and full-on career that he released not one, but two albums.
And this isn't released, like, this isn't a post-career album. Like, when I first saw this, I presumed this was, okay, he has his career in the 60s, 70s, and then we get to the mid-80s, and someone talks him into putting out an album. And it's a moneymaker and a mistake. This is done before his fight with Sonny Liston, which we will go into quite a bit, because he goes into it quite a bit. But this is... this is like right at the... we're talking about young Ali here, obviously, going under, like, this being put out under the name of Cassius Clay. That, like, this is a fascinating... And, personally, I love Muhammad Ali. Like, I go back... I'm not a, like, combat sport person particularly, but I have gone back and I've watched Muhammad Ali's fights. Which are, like, on YouTube and fun to watch. One of my favorite books is The Fight by Norman Mailer, which is following Ali as he prepares for a bout late in his career. Like, I'm a huge Ali fan, so knowing that this exists alone is amazing to me. I love when he appeared at the Logies and threatened to beat the shit out of Bert Newton. I love everything
there
about him.
There is so much to love. It is... a really delightful discovery for James and I. Maybe everybody else knows about the existence of this album, but I'd never heard of it, so I'm really excited to jump on in. The album itself, as we said, it's called I Am the Greatest. Probably the vainest name for a Vanity Project. However, because it's Muhammad Ali, I'm like, but you are the greatest, so we can't dispute that. I don't think it's vain if you can back it up.
That is kind of, because this is put out before he, like, he's literally not the world number one in this, mm-hmm. in this recording. And then it's like, and we'll get into it a bit more, but like the, to put out, so like said, I'm the greatest, you're like, all right, buddy, calm down. And now you're like, no, he was right.
He was right. It's a case of self-determination, isn't it? You say something enough, you begin to believe it. So this album, it's, you know, we've covered a lot of different genres on this podcast with the Vanity Projects we've looked at. There's been a disproportionate, I'd say, amount of country and western albums. There's been a Christmas mm-hmm. album. There's been some pop. There's been some mid-noughties emo kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, a lot of high school drama-esque pop. Yeah,
lot of high school drama pop. This is none of those. There's a little bit of music on here, but it is primarily a spoken word comedy album, which is also another reason why James and I love it so much. It was released in 1963 and recorded in front of a live audience, which just gives it a lot of energy.
Let's have a look right now, because I think that is enough of a tease to go into round one, I Am the Greatest.
I am the greatest! By Cassius Clay. This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeedy of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary.
That is round one, I Am the Greatest. Now, this is going to be a bit different from our regular episodes because there are times when these all flow into each other. But let's stop here. And firstly, was not expecting this.
Well, absolutely not. As I've just said, we've covered so many different genres on this podcast, and he had released a couple of songs throughout his career. So I just, you know, without really knowing anything about the album, hit play and immediately I'm like, oh, we are in the theater.
Mm.
There's a theatrical audience. It's a very theatrical performance. What is going on? What do you make of this intro to this album?
So there are a couple of things going through my mind at this point for it. Like, because it feels like you're at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Like, it's that kind of vibe that, like, it's strange that he's there. It is funny. It is really funny.
It is funny.
And Muhammad Ali has always been funny. Like, his lines are really good. And he's insanely quick. And, like, this is also the era, like it's strange to say, but like this is the proto rap era. Like, this is the Gil Scott Heron, like when we're going from like poetry into hip hop culture. Like, this is like Llewellyn Kwesi Johnson. We're in this area where like the poetry and musical worlds are still kind of forming. This isn't like, if someone did this today, it's very, very different. But this is like genre defining to a sense in that, like, this kind of poetry, high energy poetry reading, isn't something that the American mass audience was hugely exposed to, other than Jimmy Stewart doing dog poems on The Tonight Show, which I think there are certain people who will believe listening to this that I'm making that up. And no, dog poems were a regular staple of his thing, so go and look that up. But Bridie, what did you think coming in?
I have been burned before on this podcast when people that you have a great deal of admiration for, respect, or you know, you love them in their movies or however, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is that they're famous for, then pivot to music, or in this case, spoken word poetry, and really let you down because they just can't back it up. This is so funny. The lyrics are so clever. One of my favorite bits in here, this kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, you better increase your insurance.
Yeah, it's a good line.
That's a great line. It's so sick. And there's just, it's actually quite hard throughout this whole album just to pick out my favorite bits because there's so many punchy, funny lines. So anyway, let me take you through my train of thought. I had just pressed play without really thinking too much about it. Immediately was like, what is going on here? And then I went back to the cover of the album itself, which I feel like we just must talk about because it will contextualize this whole album for everyone. Could you please describe what is happening on the cover?
Okay, so we have in large impact font, I Am the Greatest, in all black, in a smaller, thinner font, Cassius Clay underneath. That is kind of your right third of the image, and like a fairly like, you know, cream theater background, like a theater curtain background. Over on the rest of the image, on the left-hand side, you have Muhammad Ali in a tuxedo, like in an evening tux.
Mm-hmm. With tails.
With tails. With one... His left foot is on a pink stool. He has his right fist out. Just beside him is a sword into the ground. A pile of books with an open book there. There's a newspaper on the ground. It is bizarre. It is
bizarre, and I think it is a mockery of, like, poncy British theatre actors.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that this feels like an evening with. Like, that it's definitely... But also, like, that just added so many more questions to me. Because at first I was like, is this the intro? Because there are albums that will do something like this as an introduction, and then you go into... But, spoilers, it's not. This is the show that we're up for. And then what I was stuck on here is, who organized this event? How did this come to be? What happened here? And if you are Sonny Liston and you are about to have a fight with someone and you find out that they are organizing a poetry reading to talk shit about you.
But not only a poetry reading to talk shit about you, right? Because I've done that many times, James. When you and I've got something coming up, I'll be like, hey, everyone, I've booked a bar. We're just going to talk shit about James. But it's like a fun tradition that we all have. I'll invite you next time. But if you found out that your opponent not only is having a comedy read, like poetry reading about you, but in a giant theatre with a giant audience who are all dressed to the nines. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an element of class and just, like, it you know, it's classy. It's not just shit talk. It's beautiful, classy shit talk.
So not only is this funny, not only is it surprising that it exists at all, particularly for Sonny Liston, who I would feel if I was preparing for a heavyweight boxing match and my opponent was spending a decent amount of the preparation writing poetry. Like, this is a 45-minute poem. Like,
and it's lyrically dense.
It's lyrically
dense. There's not a lot of pause in this album.
Like, I would feel like I probably have a leg up in the actual fight when it comes down to it, because you've spent a lot of time putting together your poetry evening about how well you're going to fight. It turns out not to be true.
That is how different we are, because if I found out someone was confident enough that they had the time available to write a poetry album about me, I would go, not only are you a Renaissance man with poetry in your veins, but you are so confident that you're training less and writing more to fight me.
I was literally going to pull out my degree because I thought it would be funny, and I realized it's an audio format. But like, as a trained poetic analyzer,
sorry, who is this vanity project?
Yeah, exactly. No, as a trained poet, I can't even find the word for person who analyzes poetry. How's that for my check? $30,000 in hex debt. No, but the poetic, like, can we talk about the poetic form? Because he does, like, it's very funny that in the final third of this, he does this change. So the whole way through, it is in it's in the third person. It is, he introduces, this is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. Now, so great, firstly. And then, like, he's describing the character in the third person. The kid's got a left, the kid's got a right. If he hit you once, you're asleep for the night. Then he will change this. So, firstly, the you becomes very specific, and the you is Sonny Liston. This is a poem where the reader is Sonny Liston. It's, and as you lie on the floor while the ref counts 10, you'll pray that you won't have to fight me again, for I am the man this poem's about, the next champ of the world. There isn't a doubt. So, what the great turn here is that the legend of Cassius Clay all along turns out to be about the writer Cassius Clay.
It is so, so confident, and I love that. I was just thinking before we jumped on the mic today, I was like, he's 21 years old when he records this, right? So it's 6 months.
Oh my God.
He's 21. There is nothing I can think of that I would like to do less than listen to a 21-year-old do a poetry reading about how they rule. Except for Muhammad Ali, because we're only track one, you know, out of 10 or so. It is just such a funny, great time. It's so surprisingly good. The first track is called I Am the Greatest. Let's go to track two, which is called I Am the Double Greatest.
I'm good looking, clean living, culture, and I am modest. I am so modest I can admit my own fault. My only fault is I don't realize how great I really am.
Straight off the bat, I am the double great. So we announced the change between tracks with a boxing bell, and the album is structured in rounds. You have 8 rounds of the heavyweight bout of the time. I'm not sure if that's still the case. I'm just not a combat sport person, but it is so funny to finish your first poem. Ding, I am the greatest. Yes, we're staying on this theme. I don't feel I have expressed myself enough. Also, the title, I Am the Double Greatest, is one of the funniest things I have ever read.
It's definitely something that like a toddler would say, having an argument with their brother. Like, it would have been something I would have said to my brother when I was really little. If he goes, I'm the greatest, well, I would have gone, well, I'm the double greatest. That's the energy of it, and I love it. Also, spoiler alert. But as James has just said, we haven't really thematically moved very far from track one. We're not going to move thematically beyond the title of the album, mm-hmm. I Am the Greatest. Mm-hmm. That is where we stay for the whole time. But the layers that Muhammad Ali finds to express just how great he is are really inventive and hilarious, so I don't mind.
Yeah, it is impressive as well. Like, that this stays funny. There are very few points in this where it ever drags. It's partly like he's one of the most charismatic people to ever walk the earth, and I feel that's beyond a doubt. Like, and it's just compelling to listen to. But it's also like, this is such an interesting cultural artifact as well. Like, mm-hmm. This is before, so like, for boxing lore here, he's not supposed to win this fight. Like, this is a real, like, he's a massive, massive underdog, one of the greatest upsets of all time. That loudmouth kid who was going to finally be taught a lesson actually is the greatest. This is phenomenal to listen to off the back of this. I kept thinking the whole way through about Sonny Liston and how much, like, how angry you would get knowing this exists and then losing the fight, and just how infuriating that would have to be.
If you found out that someone had written a very good comedy poetry album about you before something important, would you listen to it, or would you not because it would get in your head?
No, I'd listen to it and I would tell everyone I didn't. Like, oh, that, no, I'm not interested in it, particularly not track four, which I think is a bit hack.
Well, we're actually up to track three, which features one of my favourite jokes and sections of the whole thing, which I might say before we jump into it, because it really just sets us up to continue in this theme. Track three is called Do You Have to Ask? And there's this beautiful stanza near the top of it which says, they say you should write poems about what you know, about what you love. And I write poems about what I love. I write about me.
People ask me how I became a poet. I tell them I didn't become a poet. I was born a poet. Poetry comes natural to me, like boxing. A lot of people are surprised that a fighter like me is such a great poet. They say boxing and poetry don't mix. They are wrong. Boxing and poetry do mix. This same fist that can knock out a man holds a pen that writes a poem.
The pen is mightier than the sword, especially if it's held in my hand, which is very strong on account of all the training I've done.
I love I love this. So firstly, like this interesting like violin bed that comes in on this. I keep like, what night is this? Like, what event? Who? Because firstly, if this was happening now, let's say, like, I don't think you could put on as genuine a night like this now. Like, it seems to be everyone in this room is expecting him to be good. And everyone is enjoying it. Like, you could put on this mm-hmm. event now, which is if they said a poetry reading from Mike Tyson, I'm fucking going, but I'm not going because I expect it to be a good and fun event. I'm going because I expect it to be a disaster. This is
exactly
good and produced and thoughtful. Like, he does quite a long riff on different poets and his thoughts on different poets.
It's just so surprising in such a beautiful way. One of the things that you just mentioned there with the strings, the beautiful kind of violin bed that comes in, this is the first time that we have a little bit of a sense of what else is happening on the stage. And we're like, oh, wait, there's a string quartet there yes. or something. And as we go through the next few tracks, I started to think, what is the budget for this event?
Yep.
You have hired musicians. You have hired, like, Juilliard trained actors to come and do some Shakespearean riffs in the next track. There's a whole bunch of people there who've rehearsed and really dedicated themselves to this night. It's executed flawlessly. How many people were involved?
There's so much work. You should be boxing, dude. So much work has gone into this. And like, it is maybe my worst nightmare that you go out to see a boxer and then it is slowly revealed that you are in a spoken word musical. And this seems to be what's every track from now on is a new revelation, like you're saying, of the size and scope of production. Let's move on to the next one. Let's go to round four. I have written a drama, he says playfully.
That's the title.
The play is set in very old England. It is called Much Ado About Cassius, or The Lady Is Not for Bernie.
Father, is not that the Prime Minister I spy thither?
It is, you spy well, daughter. What ho, Prime Minister? What ho?
You called me your Highness.
Oh, my goodness. First of all, the title of that track, I Have Written a Drama, he says playfully. It's just hilarious to me.
It's a Panic at the Disco song, 100%.
And then in this track, he literally goes into a drama set in, quote, very old England mm-hmm. called Much Ado About Cassius. And then he gets all these other actors to come and be the old-timey Shakespearean characters. It's so funny. The production value of this whole thing is insane.
It just made me want to actually see Muhammad Ali play Hamlet, because this 100%. Is what the play within the play that he has written his own theatrical work. That also, like this, you could imagine this being a couple of line joke in a thing, or even a one track joke. But no, this poetry reading turns into, from this point, an unfolding theatrical performance.
So funny to me. Imagine if your agent called you up and said, here's your brief, here's the job that you're on next week. You've just spent, you know, 3 years training at Juilliard or Rada or something, and now you're going to come and do a pretend Shakespearean play with Muhammad Ali. Like, what is going on?
I think, like, do you know when people are like, let's say this, when they're so beautiful, they can wear anything and it seems fashionable because they're so beautiful.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
I feel like this is Muhammad Ali's level of talent, in that mm-hmm. nothing about this should work. And this should actually be one of the worst things we have ever done on this show.
I know. Literally the title of it. Like, backs up the whole premise of our podcast, and yet I'm like, no, you are the greatest. This is not vain at all. You rule.
Yeah, it's really good. Because I keep my instinct is always to be like, well, this must be a situation where he is a big enough star that no one has ever told him no, and when he says, I want to mm-hmm. do this, when you are the physically the best fighter on earth and you say, I would like to do this thing, very few people will say, actually, you shouldn't. But actually, he should. He can do it. If he wanted to
do it all,
he crushed it. It's real. Look, I have my own feelings about every other actor in this performance.
Yeah, that is true.
And the material they work with. A little on the nose for me. A little bit American theatre for me. But but Muhammad, he crushed it.
He does crush it. And it's funny too, because at the start I'm like, ha, you're... You know, like, doing all this hilarious stuff about Sonny Liston. Yeah, take down the jocks. Woohoo! And he mocks jocks, but then he's clearly mocking poets and artists too, because he can do art and sport better than everyone else. And I'm like, that's not fair. That's not fair. I thought you were on my side, teasing sports people.
I love Brody. I love that you see, like, the lead up to a heavyweight boxing bout as one person taking on the jocks. As if what was happening before this was Muhammad Ali was just trying to take his books to class, and Sonny Liston kept smacking them out of his head until finally he said, enough, and he reads this poem out in front of the whole school, and then they fight at 3 p.m. at the flagpole.
Is that not what happened? The story of my high school experience.
The rumble in the jungle happened in the cross country.
Okay, so our next track is called Round 5. We're up to Round 5. Will the real Sonny Liston please fall down?
I want to give him lessons. Boxing lessons. Talking lessons. I'll teach him anything. But since he's going to fight me, what he needs most is falling lessons. He can't fight. I watched him shadow boxing, and his shadow won in the first round.
So we've returned to a theme here, but the other interesting thing about this for me was this sent me on a little journey of, oh, that phrase was not invented by Eminem. The like, will the real X please stand up? Now, Brady, do you know the history of this phrase?
Well, yeah, because I researched for this podcast.
I also researched for it, but this is the one fact I actually had. I was hoping that you never bothered to look it up.
Suck it, man, I'm diligent as.
Well, for the rest of you who don't know this, I had one thing.
Yeah, I was going to share it. I wasn't going to gatekeep the... Okay, you know what? Ask me again and I'll say I don't know. Do it again.
Okay. Bridie, do you know where this phrase comes from?
No, I'm just a dumb girl. Oh, please tell me.
You fucking idiot.
Oh my God, you're so smart. Tell me.
It used to be a TV show. There was a game show. They just got, you know, it's a bit like a segment on Would I Lie to You, that, you know, someone says like, oh, the mechanic that I used to work with. And they're like, well, will the real person stand up? And then Eminem made a song out of it. And I thought it was interesting and could fill 5 minutes of the podcast, but apparently not much doing there.
Hey, you told it beautifully. Back yourself. That's a great fact. It is some interesting trivia right there. Normally, at the top of these episodes that James and I do, we discuss whether or not the artist that we're looking at that week is someone that we associate with music. We haven't done that yet because we thought we'd kind of talk about it as we go through. I am an ignorant fool and did not realize that Muhammad Ali has been so influential in the world of music, right? So as I said at the top, completely across the fact that he was pretty good at sport and like a really important political figure and an activist and all of those sorts of things. But I didn't really think music when I thought of him. And just doing the research in this, I'm like, wow, he has impacted and influenced so many musicians. Rolling Stone called him a pioneer of rap, and I wanted to mention this now because obviously there's, you know, the title of this song reminds us of the Eminem song. Mm-hmm. Eminem has cited him as one of his influences. So many rappers talk about him as this pioneer figure, someone who really took a lot of the energy and like spirit of the boxing ring into music that they've kind of tried to channel. It's really interesting. Yeah, there's even a documentary called Ali Rap, which was produced by ESPN, which is a very funny detail to me. But it interviews a whole bunch of rappers about Muhammad Ali and how he had such a huge influence on hip hop.
It's really like his cultural impact is remarkable, which like will come as no surprise. But like it's also like when you look at this in retrospect, as we do, like there's a lot of like it's remarkable. Like I'm a big fan of sport history from around this time, but it's amazing how often he comes up in other people's stories. Like absolutely. When you read about Bill Russell and the Celtics and breaking a lot of racial barriers in America, when he sits down at conferences, it's with Muhammad Ali. Like that he was a public intellectual and activist, and also like had something that a lot of the media hadn't seen before, which is a good dose of fuck you to like American imperialism particularly, which is incredible. Like he has aged beautifully in a way that like so few people ever do.
But even that, you know, like he's, you know, I was about to say he's famous for, okay, he's famous for 1,000 things. One of the things he's famous for is that he refused to be drafted into the Vietnam War, right? And was really outspoken about that, was a total activist in that time. And because of that was, you know, a huge part of that 1960s counterculture movement. But I didn't kind of follow that thought through the whole way, which is like, well, of course, that probably extended to other parts of the counterculture movement. You know, something as well, going back to his impact on music. A lot of articles have kind of talked about the fact that it makes more sense than you think that boxers who have to use the trash talk and those kind of theatrical elements of their sport to their advantage to hype them up, to hype up the crowd, there is quite a direct line there, like the spirit of that, into hip-hop. What's that word when we were talking about Randy, that album, braggadocio, is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a beautiful world. It's like a word. It's that trash talking, like almost kind of like freestyling, hyping himself and the crowd up, getting in the head of his opponent. So much of that is in hip hop.
It is amazing as well. Like one of the coldest sports moments you will ever see. Well worth your viewing. Is Ali Terrell fight, which is Terrell was a boxer who refused to call him Ali, who called him Cassius, even when Ali was saying to his face, "I have told you my name is Muhammad Ali." And then they have to go into a ring together and fight. And it is a long batch of clips of Ali wailing on this guy while stopping and saying, "What's my name?" and hitting him again and saying, "What's my name?" It is, I can't think of a moment where you realized you have screwed up worse than that exact point. But
brutal.
Let's move on. I feel like the real problem we have with this album is he's so good that it is hard to not just fall down a hole of, fuck yeah, Muhammad Ali, this rocks. Let's go to track 6, round 6. Funny, you should ask.
I have graciously consented to answer any questions you and the audience might have.
Do you have anything personal against Sonny Liston?
No, he's a nice old man, but he's got my job.
Okay, so now this feels like we're more on safer ground because Muhammad Ali in this is just doing a Saturday Night Live bit and not an amazing one. Like, this is where we get into, like, there are a couple of moments in this where what we're watching is or what we're listening to is a comedy sketch, not necessarily a poetry night reading. And this is firmly a sketch that is good. There are some great lines in it, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good episode of Saturday Night Live, but it's still an episode of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I would agree with that. No, I think you're right, James. It's fun and in the context of the show, totally fun and a necessary moment, but I think we should skip ahead onto the next one.
Round 7. has one of the stranger premises in the album. And it's called 2138.
Cassius Clay? Is he the man who chopped down a cherry tree?
Well, why no, son. He's the man who chopped down Sonny Liston.
Go we do that?
Over 150 years ago.
Yeah! Gosh, he must have been a great man.
What do you mean, must have been? He still lives.
James, can we unpack this? What is going on here?
Well, this is that, like, firstly, the joke that we just heard for this, great joke. Really good reveal. That. So what we're listening to is deep in the future, in the distant year of 2138, where they are looking back at former president and greatest man to ever live, Muhammad Ali, who is leading a parade by himself at the time. It's so, like, the premise he has put down on here is so funny about, like, it's just like, firstly, he nails, like, the impact he's going to have in all different aspects of the world, but also just the way that he formulates this as a child trying to understand Muhammad Ali's day and the reveal that he's still alive.
It's so funny.
This track would be perfect if only anyone in the American theater could do a kid's voice, even for a minute. Every time there's a single kid on Broadway, on fucking Hamilton, I don't care. Every kid's voice so great.
What do you mean? I'm just an innocent child. It is quite grating. In fact, I would go so far to say that all the other actors in this show have quite grating voices. Although I do think that is also, like, a dated thing. Like, the performance style has changed so much that we're just not.
They all sound like a bunch of pricks saying, "Look there, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Superman."
But without any hint of irony whatsoever. Look, you know what? I think is an interesting thing to think about when we listen to an album like this is that it is so antithetical to comedy and to culture generally in Australia and New Zealand to talk about how great you are, right? We have this whole tall poppy thing. Like,
yeah, I leave it to everyone else to talk about how great I am. You'll never hear me discussing it. I let everyone else discuss it. And I'll sit there and nod, but I would never lead the conversation.
Yeah, and that's what I love about you. So modest, so humble. It's just beautiful to witness.
But that's your opinion, and I agree with it, but I would never express it myself.
You're so annoying. But you know what I think? It's like, if our most brilliant and awarded sports person decided to do an album about themselves, their joke would be like, man, I'm a bit daggy or terrible. Like, Our jokes, we have the impulse to go in the opposite direction because we're so self-deprecating here. Don't you think?
So there's a couple of things that I want to discuss on that. Firstly,
tell me.
I agree with you in definitely the mindset, but I do also want to ask, which sports person would you most want to see, Australian sports person most want to see, attempt an album like this? You also brought me
Leighton Hewitt.
Well, funny you should say that, because the closest we come to this is the Beck Cartwright wedding poem, which I feel, for the uninitiated, I feel like it's worth a diversion to just read a couple of lines from the Beck Cartwright Leighton Hewitt wedding poem. I'll just take you straight to my favorite stanza.
Go for it.
Because it goes for a while. "I have no doubt I'm glad to be your wife, and being with me is now part of your life. I admire you for so many reasons. I mean, look what happened at the Four Seasons. We're about to experience the miracle of life again, but we're always remember, I'm so proud to be your wife." So swapped them around so it's new. "And having a family with you makes me so glad. I know I'll never get sad." I'm trying to think of the sports star I would genuinely like to hear this poem from the most. I don't... There aren't many rugby league poems I'm dying to hear.
Well, we're very different, because that's just obviously all I want to hear.
It feels like...
Ian Thorpe?
Well, it felt like Ian Thorpe might be the most likely... Like, even not likely, I don't feel like it's in his will, but, like, the one that would go down best with the Australian public. Mm. Although, I would worry, when you're starting with Thorpedo, I worry about your rhymes that you're going to get out of this.
I feel like Ash Barty would unironically just be good at it, because I think she's good at everything.
Absolutely. But also, like you said, it wouldn't be talking yourself up. It just would not be there. Greg Norman. Greg Norman could do this poem.
I think the title of the show, if it was done in Australia, literally because of our whole tall poppy thing, would not be I Am the Greatest. It would be something like, Poetry was the winner on the day.
It's a tale of two stanzas.
That's a short poem. Let's move on, shall we? We're up to round 8, the knockout.
While I'm talking to you, I'm writing the greatest short poem of all time. This poem tells how I feel to be as great as I am. This is it. The greatest short poem of all time. Me, wee!
So round 8, what this really spelled out for me was that when you go back and think about round 6 and 7 with their slightly shakier premises, with... let's say, like, they're moments, but definitely a drop down from your blistering start, is that he had to make 8 tracks because he called them by rounds and there are going to be 8. And like a regular boxing match, it starts very strong. Then we get into some interesting technique and then the exhaustion hits in and then you're just clinging on to the finish.
I don't think it's a creative choice to reflect what is happening in a boxing match. I think we've just run out of... creative juice at this point, but that's fine because the rest of it is so much fun. I reckon we should keep jumping through though, because we are very soon going to get to one of my favorite bits.
So, but this is an important thing for us to mention. You would think that round 8, the knockout, the end of the fight, is the end of the night, is the end of the show. Nope. There are more tracks to come. Let's move on to the next one.
Mr. Clay, that was a truly magnificent performance.
Oh, it was nothing. Though they did seem to like my dithyrambs.
Were you in trouble at any time?
Yes, I was having a bit of trouble with my iambic pentameter in the first few poems.
This bit at least makes thematic sense still. Like, so what we're seeing here is the post-match interview, which is, again, quite clever. Like, if you are
fitting.
If this is his Melbourne International Comedy Festival hour and you are saying that our premise is that we're in a boxing match, good. Good ending. Like, nice spot to have a back and forth, a bit of thing happening. Good.
1963, Melbourne International Comedy Festival, best newcomer, Muhammad
exactly.
Ali, and also world heavyweight champion.
Both those things are so political, though, you know.
And you're right. So it totally fits the theme of the whole night, like, sporting-wise. It also fits the lyrical themes, I am the greatest, as we just heard there. Mm-hmm. The track finishes with, yes, I need everybody to know that I am the greatest. Do you remember, cast your mind back, James, to the start of this album?
Yes.
Round 1 is called I Am the Greatest. Mm-hmm. Round 2 is called I Am the Double Greatest. We've just had the post-match interview, the afterpiece, where he goes, what I want everybody to know is that I am the greatest. And then we go into the next track, which is also called I Am the Greatest.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny.
So, what I want to know is, are we still listening to the same night? Like, did they finish everything, then like, all right, now we're going to do it again, the first track again, but this time I'm going to bring out just a bluegrass band?
Yeah. Which I'm here for. It gives it a great kick of energy, which we need towards the end of an album. But I really would have loved to be a fly on the wall, just what is going on for the audience in this moment.
It's weird to say, but like, in my vision of the audience, this is when dessert is being served. They're just like, all right, we've all had time. We've had a nice night. All right, now we're going to play this. You enjoy your cheesecake. It's a cheesecake in my mind. And a little bit of panna cotta maybe. But then... then we'll be back with the other acts that are on tonight that are not this pop continuing.
Totally. And then, because we now have a full band on stage, we keep them there and go into the only completely sung track on the album, which is a beautiful cover of Stand By Me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh,
stand by me. Oh, stand. I was in shock. Like... do you know what this made me think of? Not from a musical perspective, but from a comedy perspective, is the you know the Andy Kaufman bit Impressions, where he comes on and he's like playing like someone who's like Eastern European, can barely speak English at all, is doing like intentionally bad impressions, and this is like when an audience doesn't know they're really watching Andy Kaufman, they don't know what that means. And he does two impressions, then he does an Elvis one, and everyone's prepared for it to be as bad as the others, and he does an incredible Elvis impersonation. What this felt like to me is if you are watching this event and then you get to the end of this long poem and he pulls out this Stand By Me cover, you're like, oh my god, you can do this, you should have been doing this, do this.
Totally, the whole time I'm like, how have you been hiding your beautiful voice from us? But also, of course you have a great voice, because there's nothing you can't do.
That's if I had a voice this good, I would not sign up for any profession where people punch me in the throat. I would try and avoid that as a matter of course.
It's a really delightful little discovery to bury towards the end of this album. We have one more track. This is The Gang's All Here. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. Join in the
fun. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. That's The Gang's All Here.
So jaunty.
A song straight out of every, like, 50s film prom scene.
100%. This is the only track which really situated me in the time that it was recorded, you know? I just loved it. It's so cute and joyful.
I am, again, I'm sure, like, these are two different albums. The last, like, absolutely, three tracks, and there's a poetry reading, and then there's the start of a musical album. There's, like, an EP at the back, which is fantastic, and, like, which I would absolutely listen to. Also, I love anyone starting a song with, like, are you ready? Yeah. Am I the greatest? Yeah. It's just very funny.
That's how I start everything. Now, look, I also a poet. I have just been looking at the titles of all the tracks, and I think you can make a beautiful poem just from the titles themselves. And I would encourage anyone just to get the track listing of this off Spotify and use it as your morning affirmations in the mirror, right? If you just start every day with, I am the greatest. I am the double greatest. Do you have to ask? I am the greatest. I am a knockout. I am the greatest. Like, it's great. You don't. I think that we'll really up our vibration going into the day.
That's a beautiful idea, and maybe then you feel good enough that you can go out and professionally punch someone in the face.
Yeah, I've been doing it for free like an idiot. Okay, so that is the album. It was received marvelously. It was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Comedy Release.
So usually, just to put this in context of how big this means, usually to get a Grammy Award for Best Comedy Release, you have to publicly masturbate in front of someone.
Not only was it nominated for a Grammy Award, it peaked at number 61 on... well, it wasn't called the Billboard chart back then, but what we now know as the Billboard chart. Also, he releases another album for children a couple of like 10 or 15 years later or something. 1976, there it is. Another spoken word novelty record, which also got a Grammy nomination. This man can do it all.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay, so going back to what you said before about how would you feel if you are training for a boxing match and you find out your opponent has spent heaps of time writing a comedy spoken word album about you, has put it on in a theater with very high production values, and then it gets nominated for a Grammy, and also he beats you. Like, this is, in terms of the long game, this recording an album is the best piece of trash talking he's ever done.
Oh, yeah, you got to take the L on this. Like, you've been both. Bridie, I would also like to, just before we go on and rate this album, revise an earlier statement of mine, which is, what Australian sports star would I like to see have done this album? It is obviously prime Shane Warne. I would like to have seen that released before the first day of the Ashes. Could you imagine what that track would sound like? It would have Cold Chisel as the backing track, I am certain. That's what it should have been.
That would be... oh, incredible choice, James. That would be wonderful.
It feels like we don't even have to ask. But Bridie Connell, was this album a mistake?
Nothing about this album was a mistake, even the weird bits. I had no idea what we were in for. I'm not going to lie. My heart dropped when I realized it was a spoken word album. That's not really my vibe. I love this so much. It's so funny. It's brilliant. It's not a mistake at all. And I really highly recommend everyone just like pours yourself a glass of wine and listens to this really cooked, weird piece of wonderful stuff. What do you think, James? Was it a mistake?
No, I 100% agree. I think this is one of the few, very few ones that we would recommend you actually listen to, because it's like, even if you are out for a walk or something, it is an amazing thing. Just that it exists is incredible. So I highly recommend it. Go and have a listen to this. We do need to, while you're listening to things, induct a track into our Vanity Project podcast playlist Hall of Fame. Easy to say, easy to remember. Now, the gang's all here. As much as I feel like I Am the Double Greatest could be the track that belongs there, or 2138, I do want to keep the fidelity of our playlist to some degree, because I worry about that. So... let's, like, I think maybe the gang's all here, or Stand By Me might not be. Oh, actually, do you know what? We just put in the musical I Am the Greatest, obviously.
Perfect. It's really good. I do highly recommend everybody check it out. It's a really great trip. We had intended that we would, in fact, cover the other album of his that we mentioned, the spoken word album from 1976, which features such luminaries as Frank Sinatra. So maybe we will keep that in our pocket for another time. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, go check it out. Check out the whole playlist. It will ruin your algorithm. My daily mixes from Spotify.
Oh my god. Terrible. Oh my god.
They're terrible.
and also just to do a bit of housekeeping from last week, I suspect we will be adding the Christmas song by David Hasselhoff to this as well.
Yes. I may have, in fact, already added some Christmas songs. That is a cursed album. If you haven't listened to our bonus holiday episode from last week, do so at your own risk, to be honest. It's absolutely cursed. But thank you so much for listening to this album. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did. And thanks so much for your support every week. It's been great.
That's so good. You did the sign off so I don't have to do it, because that was lovely.
No,
so
I did half of it, so you can do the bit that you hate.
Okay, rate and review the show. Actually, I looked this up and people actually do rate and review the show, and it's very nice of them. So thank you for doing that, even though I put no effort into actually asking you to do it. It seems that
James,
people do it.
Are you blushing? You really find this hard to say.
I just don't care for it. I don't care what people think. I don't need you.
Oh no, you've listened to this album too much. It's taken it over.
I am the greatest, Bridie. I am the greatest. All right, bye.
See you next time. Don't stop recording. Don't stop recording. I'm doing the intro again, okay?
Yeah, I'm definitely not just going to leave this at the back
James.
Of the episode. Go on, do the intro
Fine.
Again.
No, I know it's all futile. Goodbye. I hate you.
Vanity Project.